So just a little, a couple of thumbnails of the poets that we'll look at. Kenneth Rexroth, who is considered by a lot of people to be the father of the Beat movement. He was a man of letters, and he moved to San Francisco and sort of shepherded the inception of the movement. I believe he was responsible for the reading, the original reading at the Six Gallery. Mm-hmm. In later years, he denounced the Beats, kind of like when Bob Dylan now says that he really wasn't into social change. I don't know. I think he was probably...
Rexroth's quote was, "An entomologist is not a bug."
Yes, you read that. Yeah.
And we have one.
We have a beautiful poem by Rexroth, at least a portion of a poem, from when he was a young man running horses across Cascade Pass. So you can find that in your reader.
Just a
please
short little story. You know, I moved here in 1980 to LeConnor, and I'd only been here about a month when a friend of mine said, down at the Garden Club there's going to be a poetry reading. You know, when someone's coming up from San Francisco and he's reading with another local poet. And I remember going to that. And it was the year before he died. Wow. Kenneth Rexroth, wow. With Robert Son.
Wow.
And to see the two of them together.
Yeah. Oh, that must have been something.
And Rexroth was coming out of City Lights and saw this kid, 15 years old, obviously knotted out on heroin, and he said, "Man, you got to get off that stuff. Come on, I'll make you a meal." And he helped that kid get off of heroin, and that kid was Sam Hamill. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So he saved Sam's life.
Wow.
The threads.
I was doing Morocco.
Ice cream.
Allen Ginsberg reading one of his many beautiful poems. You know, we can talk about him all weekend. Another look at one of our leaders. This is a fun shot.
It's in Boulder.
It's in Boulder, Colorado. Okay, Sweat Lodge, and it's Ginsberg and Waylon and Burroughs.
They were staying also with Ann Waldman.
Uh huh.
So they were visiting Wade By. I think he's the first. Was the first husband of Ann Waldman.
Uh-huh.
Together.
Uh-huh.
It was very hot because it gets very hot in Boulder around this time. They went to hammams in Morocco.
Okay, so we'll hear a little bit about that. This is Joanne Kiger. She was one of Gary Snyder's partners. And I bring her in along with a couple of other women because the women in the Beat movement are generally not mentioned, and they certainly played a role. And I'll read you one of her poems during the weekend. That's in Kyoto. This is a young Diane DePrima. Diane is recognized in most of the readings that I have done as being sort of the primary woman of the Beat poetry era. She is alive today. She was, so is Joanne, of course. She has written all through her life. She's been a feminist. She bridged the Beat and the hippie movements. By becoming a member of Timothy Leary's group and then moving to San Francisco, and has done a lot of studies of the mystic of Eastern religion.
Excuse me, just a...
Please.
She's now very sick because she has the Parkinson's.
Oh.
And all the poets are trying to donate to help.
There's
a Kickstarter campaign for her
campaign
to raise money.
So when I was in Arupa, Ann Waldman said that we are welcoming every little penny that you could make. to help Leandra Kramer, because she's going through hard times.
Mm-hmm. Her book-length poem, Loba, is considered to be sort of a female counterpart to Howl.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the she-wolf that raised Romulus and Remus, you know, so very powerful feminine archetype.
What is the title of the book?
Loba.
L-O-B-A. It's a book, it's about that thick. And the first poem in it is just blow your mind.
Yeah. And this is Denise Levertov, whose grave Habib just visited in Seattle. She was born in Britain, but she considered herself an American. She naturalized, is known as an American poet. She went through many incarnations as a writer and did some pretty powerful writing about writing.
Some notes on organic form and the function of the line break, two of the more important ones. She lived the last few years of her life in Seattle, writing a lot about the mountain, Mount Rainier. She said she spoke with a mid-Atlantic accent. She had a long, extensive correspondence with William Carlos Williams, and very, very powerful woman. Her correspondence with Robert Duncan is amazing. Most of their friendship was conducted via letters, so it's about 800 pages. It's about that thick, and it's really remarkable. Goes up to the time where they had a falling out over the Vietnam War and their response to it.
Did you say her name?
Denise Levertov. She worked as a nurse at one point during one of the wars, and had a long relationship with her spirituality, and actually became a Christian, a Catholic, by the end of her life. As Jack Kerouac became famous, he struggled deeply, and he began to degenerate with alcohol. His spiritual quest seemed to go toward spirits. And you can sort of see. Think about that young, hunky guy in the checkered shirt, you know, you could sort of just see what his former athletic, you know, football star days, and now he's to this.
How old is he in this picture?
Well, he didn't live to be past 49.
He's 22, he was born 22.
He's still very young in this picture.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen this picture of the young Waylon, and then he became a transmitted Zen priest, and lived in San Francisco, affected the lives of a lot of people.
Gary Snyder really put that thing. They were quite close.
They lived together at Reed College. That was where they met. Snyder as a young man. Probably around the time he was writing Earth Household. Those of us who had the good fortune to meet him when he came up for the Lookout Rendezvous and the promotion of the book, Poets on the Peaks, found him to be a person who, unlike a lot of people who you look up to and then are greatly disappointed in meeting, really lived up to his reputation. Very
didn't he come out here?
Lovely person. Yes, that's what I was talking about. He came to the Upper Skagit. He came again. He's come up. He comes periodically. Yeah. Comes and does readings. So this is where we're going. What we're going on.
And, you know, I've kind of had dual careers in ways of, I became a work. A lot of maintenance, but then in the middle 90s, I became a designer for the park, and it was really fun, and I designed probably every boardwalk, shelter, entry stations, and the last thing I did, you probably all came by, was the entry station to the park, the Henry Rutt Cascade National Park. But as time went on, and all the time beside that, I was working on the lake in the summers. And I worked with SCA, but in 2005, when NCI started these youth programs, with diverse youth and youth from all kinds of backgrounds and ethnicity. It just captured my heart and became to me way, way, way more to me than designing. As I just, you know, designing is fun, but there's a lot of pressure and you're only as good as your last one you did. And these kids, it just kind of restored a little bit of faith to me. And so this became one of my more favorite things to do. And go to the next one. There's a treat on the left.
In this very room.
And on the right here, this young man was from Afghanistan, and he was just quivering. He was so excited to drive a boat. In Afghanistan, there are no boats. And it was really fun. So I just let certain kids drive the boat every now and then. He was just beside himself. So it's quite a treat. Here's where we're going. So, you know, here it says 4 1/4. I think when we go there tomorrow, there's a scratch sheet in there. It says 4 3/4, right? You think it's less than 5 miles.
And some burn marks.
Yeah, and some bites on it. Here's some of these kids in the program, and they all go up there, and believe me, it takes a long time, but it sticks with them forever. Yeah. I can just tell. Look at them, they're running right now. Yeah. There they are. Believe me, they don't get home till like, they don't get back down to like 10 at night. We had a class one time, there's one of our classes. We had a class one time, and they were paddling in their canoes, and we were in the mule, and we were ahead of them. So we parked, and we thought, well, wonder when we'll see them, you know. We were up there hours. We were up there hours. And then we head down, like, wow, where are they? Pretty soon, here they come. Dirt all over them, you know, even sweating and then dirt, and they're just, how do you do it, man? Staggering up.
They're so proud of themselves.
Yeah. So here, we were in a thunderstorm as we were riding, so we got the tarp out, put our poles to good use.
Did a riding exercise.
Remember that one, Saul?
I remember the big crash of lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So
thank you to all the photographers. They really did a beautiful job. And I'm going to turn the program... Oh, did you want to say something else, Jay?
No, I just turn it over to Paul.
Turn it over to Paul.
Yeah. I'd just like to say one thing, and that's just... It's an amazing opportunity to do what we do. Not with just with this group of adults, but with all those kids that Jerry's talking about. And we could not do that without the support of the art. I mean, not just because of the place, but because of all the people, from Jerry to all the rangers and maintenance folks who make that happen. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of people who help those kids do what they do, but it absolutely transforms their lives. When they go from never having seen the night sky, never building a campfire, to feel like they are confident woods people. And for many of them, they never had that sense of confidence or sense of public. Many of them are new immigrants, and they come from places where the concept of public lands does not exist. And when they come here and they hear that they own this place, it changes their concept of being an American.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank
what's a great marriage is the park.
Oh, it's right there.
We're lucky. Sometimes they're really generous to some of our time, but NCI, we cannot recruit those kids.
Okay, here we go. Let me just go.
If it doesn't, it's great conversation.
Good.
Okay.
Okay.